All right, guys, it is Greg Jovi, the co-promoter and co-creator of PWCS Wrestling, and I am here, sleep-deprived but alive, coming at you with another episode of the PWCS Wrestling Podcast. We are on the heels of the Stage 1 2018 show, and guys, you guys all came out in droves. We had a heck of a house there. Everybody was loud and on it, and it was a fantastic show. I'm really, really happy with it. I know everybody involved was really, really happy with it. And I can't wait to really get into detail with it, which we're going to give it its own episode down the line. So I don't want to get into it too much here. But I do want to say that there was a lot of emotion in the air. So if you came out and supported that event, you really supported a lot of guys that were really hungry and ready to perform for you. There was a lot of guys there that were ex-NWL guys. There was the full-time folks, which, of course, they're scrambling. That was their full-time job, and they're having a gigantic life change. And there's also a lot of young kids there, guys like Matt Waterman, guys like Rashid Ali, Shane Sanders, etc., that stepped into that ring for us for the first time, that maybe it wasn't their full-time job, but it was their only booking. It was the only world that they knew, really. They didn't have to hustle for other bookings. And so a lot of people were very grateful to have a place to ply their craft. And it was a very weird and emotional night for me to have those guys coming up and saying thank you for having a spot to do their thing and welcoming them in. Having fans, it's always weird to have fans say thank you to me for a show. I had multiple people reach out on Twitter or Facebook and say thank you. It was a great show. And not to sound corny or like I'm, you know, being one of those guys, but I mean, yeah, I have to thank you people. You people allow me to do what I do and live my dream of owning a professional wrestling company. You guys shouldn't be thanking me for putting on these events. It's without you guys, then people like me and Matt Jackson, who we stood in the ring with, don't exist. And so that's the point that Jackson and I really wanted to drive home was, you know, without guys like you coming out and supporting, we're not able to put wrestling in that building every month. And if you missed the announcement, that was the announcement that we are going to tag team to make sure that you guys get great professional wrestling, whether it's under the SLA banner or the PWCS banner. It doesn't matter to us. There's going to be great professional wrestling in Spalding Hall once a month, and we'll have a traveling champion. So we are not going to give the Gateway Heritage, once St. Louis Anarchy Championship back full time, it'll be promoted and defended on both shows. There was the shocking victory of Paco Gonzalez becoming the new champion after Danny Adams had just won it from Davey Vega in controversial fashion. And so now we're looking forward to Paco Gonzalez's reign on both brands and bringing you guys some fantastic professional wrestling each and every month. We'll probably have Pierre on at some point to kind of talk about the transitions over the years, working together, how working with him has affected my promoting career, things like that. I think that would be a really interesting chat to have him in for one time. But I don't want to get too far into that because it does get its own episode. What I do want to detail in the intro, I think I'm kind of getting what this intro is and what it is. I really want to use this to kind of talk about the promoter life and different things that you encounter and deal with. There's the emotion of running a show and the stress and all that stuff. There's the personal life. We've talked about that. There's super fun things that happen. And then there's, man, I don't really know which category stuff like this falls into, but I'm going to read you just a couple of emails that we got over this weekend. First of all, you know, if you have anything that you need to email us to, you want to talk to us about, if you have questions, don't hesitate to reach out. There was a certain fan that asked me a very detailed question on Twitter, and because my life is a shitstorm, I have not responded to him yet, and I feel like garbage. But for the most part, we love to hear from fans. We love to hear from potential wrestlers. So if you want to reach out on social media. Send us a message at the PWCS Facebook or Twitter. Send us an email at pwcswrestling@gmail.com and ask your question or send your booking inquiry. If you want to know how to get into the wrestling business, how to be an announcer, manager, anything like that. Like, I love helping people. I did two very successful Reddit AMAs over the course of my promoting career. And that was really cool to me. There was one guy in particular reached out and messaged me about, hey, you know, how did you get started? And he read through all that AMA, and he now owns a very successful promotion over in England. I think it's called like North Wrestling. You should look them up on Twitter. I think they have a hell of a lot more Twitter followers than I do now. And we still, like, every once a year we'll correspond. So, what I'm about to read you is very much not that. It is a email from a what appears to be dangerously insane gentleman named Jeff. I will censor his last name for you so to save him some embarrassment, I suppose. I don't want to bury this guy, or I don't want to discourage anybody from reaching out or trying to be involved in wrestling, because Lord knows I had people look me in the eye and tell me that I couldn't do it. I had Tony Cazzino look me in the eye and told me at my training session, one of my training sessions, that I should just, quote, fucking quit, because I'm never going to make any money doing this manager thing. And so I don't want to discourage anybody, but I also think you have to have, you know, some sort of connection to reality. Like, when you email PWCS, you're not emailing this group of conglomerates of a corporation. You're emailing two guys that, you know, put this together with everything that they have. And we don't have this big team of people or script writers, which is what old Jeff is looking to do, I suppose. Says, "Hello, everybody. My name is Jeff." He provides his last name. "I'm a 39-year-old man who grew up watching wrestling, and as a really young boy and grew up my kids around it as well." I guess what he means, raised his kids, which this is an interesting point. There's a lot of folks. This is a different thing to me than somebody being like, "Man, I really love professional wrestling. How do I get involved?" I have no problem detailing how you can do it and what the steps are to take. This is very odd to me to just be like, "You know what? I'm a 40-year-old dude. I love wrestling. I deserve to write professional wrestling." That would be like me going, "Hey, Russo brothers, I just watched Infinity War and I'm really passionate about Marvel Comics. Here's my next script for the next Avengers movie." Like, that's going to get thrown in the fucking garbage. And you know, I think that's what I'm saying. You have to have some reality to this. He continues, "The reason why I am messing you is because I believe that what me and my crew have to offer your promotion could really bring in some new faces in the crowd and possibly new sponsors in the future. All I ask is for a little bit of your time, a little bit of room." I don't know. I guess he has some sort of physical fucking presentation he's got to put on. "And the okay to carry it out. I go by the name The Cobblestone Mobster, J-Dub. My stable name is The Pride," which already kind of is marketed here in this area. "If any of this has sparked your interest, please respond. It seems like we were getting off on the right foot. I'll tell you more about my epic one-off script that's going to change the way anybody who's there to witness it watches pro wrestling. 4 exclamation points. Thanks. # The Pride will hunt you down. 4 more exclamation points. That's the kind of shit that I fucking deal with, man. If it doesn't look like an e-fed thing, it's some delusion like this. And so I don't know, man. You want to know how to get into professional wrestling? Get trained. Go to a training school and get trained. You don't want to be a man. You don't want to be a wrestler. Still, go to a training school. Tell them that. I went to the Dynamo Academy. I told them I wanted to be a manager and that I was willing to do anything to do it. And I busted my ass. I worked out with the guys. I learned to bump. I did the stuff, and I'm here today. And just hard work is what gets you there. Sending an email about your one-off script that's going to change the way anyone who watches wrestling perceives the product is not going to do it for you, man. And while I'm on it, man, if you're listening to this on an off chance, Robbie E., stop fucking emailing me, man. So we get quarterly emails from Robbie E. dating back to 2015. I shit you not. I responded to the first one, and maybe that was my problem, but they went from being very detailed about how many Twitter followers he has and Instagram followers he has and the fact he's on Pop TV to just, "Hey, bro, 7/13/17. Hey, 11/8/17. Hey, February 18th, 2018. Hey, bro," we're just like his fucking late night booty call. Like, that's what we are to Robbie E., apparently. I don't know, man. Maybe I'll keep detailing some of this weird shit, but the overall thing is that, yes, you can be involved in professional wrestling. Your story can end up like mine. You could be doing everything that you ever wanted to do, but there's no magic bullet. There's no overnight success to it. You go, you get trained. The other way, I was discussing this with our ring announcer, Chris. over the weekend. I was like, you know, man, everybody wants to know how to do this. How do you break through that wall? Chris is a perfect example. Chris showed up show after show after show, expecting nothing, many times doing nothing. And then one time we had no options for ring announcers. We had no options for staff. He was the last resort, and somebody showed me a video, said, hey, this guy can do it. And so we put him in there, and he did a fine job. And each time he's done a little bit better and a little bit better. Now he's like our full-time ring announcer with Tito McGee gone and with Sarah ring announcing so many other places. It gives us a different look, and he does a good job. And you got to be like that. Be like Sarah. Be like Chris. You show up. You bust your ass. You do anything that you're available to. If you can't wrestle and you don't want to wrestle and you don't think you're able to go to the training school, then at least do that. Show up afterwards. Shake people's hands, tell them, hey, is there anything I could do? Is there something I could carry? Is there anything that you guys need? And you're going to get told no a lot. Like being in professional wrestling is a war of attrition, fought through many, 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 many no's. But eventually you're going to get a yes, and that's all that anybody can hope for. This week we're going to tackle the championship spectacular, what was the primordial ooze that became the mega ticket. We're going to talk about how it was a make or break show, how the Jimmy Jacobs spot came to be, and a lot of other fun things. So stick around with me. Me and the nameless faceless announcer Dan are going to go through the entire episode here with you guys. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the back half. Been working on it for quite some time.
Yeah. We got the builders, happy little builders out here trying to get the Wi-Fi up. So here we go. We got the PWCS Championship. The very first PWCS Championship, featuring, of course, the Tammy Jovi Memorial Cup. Going into this, Greg, what were you kind of thinking about with this, especially with this being the first championship that you were able to hold? Like, what were kind of your thoughts going into this this event?
Well, after we ran through, at the end of the last show, kind of where we were at, that we were happy that we had built up this story and that we had something that we knew people. We knew after that third show, people were interested in seeing the climax.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that we had done everything that we could, but it was nervous to, you know, now you have Colt Cabana on the books. We had never booked a big name before.
Right.
We knew that this needed to be this was really the make or break show. And I think that's going to be a theme as we continue to talk and go through this, is because, you know, if the first championship match and the first championship show isn't like a banger, mm-hmm. top to bottom, and that first championship match doesn't deliver, then the whole thing is meaningless and we're done. We're dead in the water, you know?
Yeah.
So you could tell all the great stories you want up to that, but it would be like if you know, the NFL builds to the Super Bowl, the first ever Super Bowl, and then it's an awful 3-7 game.
Yeah, that sounds terrible.
Like it's that, so it had to be something that was going to deliver. And we knew we had it, but as has become tradition, as we look back at these, at the what would become known as the mega ticket cards, there was some disaster afoot as we led up to it.
Oh, yeah? More disasters?
Yeah, there's cancellations and things like that, which we have dealt with every mega ticket. It seems like there's peril at every championship show. And so,
yeah, it also was a pretty big plague on the first season in general, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So at that time, it was kind of par for the course. I think we freak a little bit more now when it seems to come around every winter. But, I mean, so we knew that this was a big one, and I think it had the aura, as we started to sell tickets and we started to promote, it had the aura of a big event. Like, we did a kind of like I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Semi-Pro, but Will Ferrell's character promotes the Flint, Michigan Mega Bowl,
mm-hmm.
and he just promotes it with such vigor, and he talks about it like it's a big thing, and so it becomes a big thing. And I feel like that's sort of what we did. We created our own hype of like, yeah, see, it's gonna be the fucking greatest thing ever. Like, and it brought people out, and so, I mean, and we ended up selling, legit sellout of that building.
Yeah.
We just obviously watched a tape back together, and you commented on how they were packed in there.
Oh, yeah.
And, I know, like, fire code, the room was, like, in the 200s, like, you know, that we could legally have in the room.
Right.
Because, believe me, I checked.
Yeah, the YMCA. You worked there at the time.
Yeah.
But the 130, 100, you know, 50 people that we had in there, I don't remember the exact number anymore, but whatever we cut it off at probably was more than really should have been in there, because when they write the fire code, they don't really account for an 18-foot by 18-foot wrestling ring in the middle of it.
Right.
But, we were very, very happy leading up to it, and obviously we'll tell some stories about the things that happened, good and bad, along the way as we go through the matches, but just as far as the draw and the sort of that aura that we built, we knew that we were going to have a special night, and then all we had to do was deliver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so definitely we had to start it off somewhere, and so you try to start it off with a bang. Try to start it off with a big match, so to speak, where you got the Hooligans facing off against the team of Baracus and Mad Dog coming back again for this one.
Not too much to delve into here other than, obviously, the Hooligans were a big deal, St. Louis Anarchy, and so we had not got to bring them in because of just not a focus on tag team wrestling.
Right.
So we thought that was a good time to kind of, sort of like we've done in future here, it was a local name or a regional name. You try to add on with those big names on the card already. So we were like, let's bring these guys in. And there was nobody in my mind better to put them against than Baracus and Mad Dog. And those guys, like I said it the last time, I want to book Mad Dog right now. Like, Mad Dog is the man. I don't know what it is about his work that I watch it. And I was like, man, why are we not using this guy right now? And him and Baracus worked really well as a tag team. I think it's something that, like, that would work going forward, even now. It was a good match. A lot of beef in this match. Yeah, a lot of big dudes flying around.
I believe that Drew Exano said that there was a half ton worth of people up inside that ring.
I believe you did the math, and it worked out.
It worked out pretty good. I think that was about 300 per. Might have been a little short, but I don't know.
One of the few things you did not tear apart Drew Exano Jr. about as we watched through this tape.
Yeah, he was mathematically accurate on that. We'll give him that one.
But it was a fun open. It got the crowd into it. And I think it was smart of us to put the Hooligans out there because, as we'll kind of get into later, more in depth, but this was sort of the first time that St. Louis Anarchy crowd really came out and gave us a shot.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of names in the audience that have become regulars for us now that we've moved into the Spalding Hall that, at the time, kind of saw us as lesser than or... at least different than. We were drawing in a much more casual crowd at the time.
More family.
Yeah, it was much local more of like, kind of and thing. And that was a concerted effort because, it's kind of a Bischoff philosophy that I follow of like, if everybody in the area is zagging right, you can either follow all five or six of them or you can zig the other way. And I thought that at the time, like, okay, everybody loves St. Louis Anarchy because it's this debaucherous, foul-mouthed, dirty, sort of punk rock underground thing, well then let's try and have the same quality stuff, but let's try and draw the kids and the families that maybe they wouldn't want to take there. And I think it was successful in the beginning. There's a lot of people that would tell us, like, oh man, we love both shows, and you would see them at Anarchy without their kids, and they would be comfortable bringing their kids to our show. So yeah. It worked for those what we needed in the beginning, and we've kind of transitioned to be more adult-oriented, I think we're in a good middle ground now where, like, you could bring your kid and maybe you got to earmuff them once or twice throughout the show, but we don't have our pedal all the way down to the floor either.
Yeah, yeah. You put a little bit of the brakes on Christian Rose every once in a while. But speaking about a couple or a current mainstay being Christian Rose, here on the next match after the Hooligans and Baracus and Mad Dog, we have two guys that you'd easily recognize in current-day PWCS making their debut, which is Paco Gonzalez versus Danny Adams.
Yeah, this is long before they were the millennial and the Paco that you know now.
I'm kind of curious, though. Was this like right about the time when they were tag team kind of breaking in general?
So they were breaking in together. I don't know how long they were in, but it wasn't long. I know it was pitched to me as, I didn't even know their names at the time, to be honest with you. Fitchett really politicked to get them on because we had a full card once everything was in place, and Fitchett was like, there's these two students that are just killing it, and you need to have them on. You need to start booking them. You need to book them. And And I was like, man, this is just, we don't have room. We already have 8 matches and one of them is gigantic. Like, we don't, you know, we don't want to overbook this card. And he was like, they'll work for free. And I was like,
free's
man,
pretty
I,
good.
You know, and he just, as I have learned as a theme in life, the world just bends to Matt Fitchett's will. Whatever he wants, the world and universe is going to work out. So eventually I gave in and I was like, all right, fine. You know, they can come in and they can work each other. And they were kind of doing this match around the horn at all the places that would have them, with Paco as the good guy, Danny as the bad guy. And they were just kind of the new, young, fresh faces trying to get a spot in places. And that was just like the match they did. And you could tell it was really polished because they brought it here. And I mean, it was a great match. And both guys really impressed.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we watched this match over and we eventually realized that there was, you know, spots right away. And we knew exactly where we wanted to go with Danny. And looking back, I would have thought that we knew exactly where we wanted to go with Paco too, because you watch the match and I mean it's obvious that they're both very good.
Yeah. And they were both still pretty kind of over at the time too. Paco was still getting chance at the beginning of that game. Match.
Paco had chance all throughout, and I think it was partially organic, partially some of he would kind of travel with a little group of folks for a while.
Oh yeah.
Like of his people that he went to college with and stuff would follow him around and watch his matches.
That makes sense.
And so that created some of that as well. But it's funny, you asked the question as we were watching, when did these guys end up on teams? And we were just looking before this, and I knew, I remembered very clearly that we watched the match and just saw Danny had that smug character, and we knew immediately, okay, he's a guy that can slot in as an ego buster. And that he could be a guy that's a constant and a mainstay, because we already knew that we wanted the next season really rein in on all the musical chairs of guys on different teams and sort of get lockdown rosters.
Right.
And so we decided that we were going to do that, and we were going to set a maximum cap and all, you know, all that kind of stuff that we've done now with the teams. And so we knew Danny could be a mainstay guy for us pretty much right away. But I would have thought that, I think there even was discussion at the time of putting Paco on the blacklist simply because he wore black and red like everybody else on the blacklist. But I was shocked to go back at notes and find out that he doesn't appear on results again until the next year's, what would be dubbed the mega ticket.
Yeah.
Which is shocking to me, because I mean, you look at this match, and I mean, I'm sure there were people that we booked after that were worse wrestlers than Paco. No offense to the unnamed people.
Who we'll eventually get to, unfortunately.
We kind of wanted a spot for him. I don't want to just bring somebody in to bring them in, especially if they're going to be coming in regularly. So we don't just want to like do it just to do it. So we go with Paco I was shocked to see that Paco doesn't make it on a team until then, because he was very talented in this match. And I mean, his skill set is there in the tape. I guess we just didn't find a fit for him, because we want to make sure that if we're bringing somebody in consistently, that there's a rhyme and reason to it.
Right.
And so, but looking back, I mean, he would have been a really good fit for the blacklist, and it does kind of get reworked as we go through. So I don't know. I guess that was just a rare Greg Jovi miss.
Yeah. It would have been quite a different PWCS, perhaps, if Paco was on the blacklist instead of the Resurgence. Who knows what butterfly effects would have happened from that? Would have been interesting to see.
VDP could have been the leader of the Ego Busters.
Let's not go too far. But anyway, at the end of that match, he had a surprise run-in for all of the fans at the mega ticket there. Jimmy Jacobs, being followed up, of course, by you, apparently, had brought Jimmy Jacobs to PWCS.
So I'm really happy to tell this story in length now, publicly.
Publicly.
Because it's probably like a top 5 moment of my entire life. This promo and having Jimmy Jacobs in. You, of course, know that we've traveled to various areas to watch Jimmy Jacobs, and that it, to me, not to gush too much, because I know that's not the cool thing to do, but Jimmy Jacobs, to say he's an influence on what we do, me and Jason, the way we tell stories, would be an understatement. I think when it comes to stories told in a pro wrestling ring,
there's no one that's done it better than Jimmy Jacobs. And that goes back to the story arc that he had from, to me, the greatest story ever told in the professional wrestling ring is the Jimmy Loves Lacey leads into Age of the Fall story.
Uh-huh.
It's a soap opera drama, well, you know, call it whatever you want, but when he starts out as the emo kid that he's obsessed with Lacey for years, he does everything he could do. He turns on his brother, his friend, in BJ Whitmer. They have this brutal cage match, and she falls in love with him because of it, and he gets her and realizes that that doesn't make him happy either. And so he starts the Age of the Fall because he realizes the problems with society and everything that led into that like 3-4 year story. I don't think anything matches it.
Mm-hmm.
And we followed that and became, well, we were the smart marks. We were the people that, you know, were on the message boards and going to shows and trying to rile up Austin Aries, and which is another story for another time when Jason is here. But we were such huge fans of Jimmy Jacobs. And I originally, when we were putting together, we always knew we wanted a name for this championship show. We knew
right.
We wanted to bank money, and then take a shot and have a name, get a casual fan or those indie fans in and really show them, okay, this is what we've been doing. So one of the names that I originally thought of was I wanted to do Jimmy Jacobs versus Matt Fitchett was the first thing I ever thought of.
Uh-huh.
And ironically, I thought, there's no way we can make that happen because you're going to have to fly him in, and I'm sure he charges a bunch of money, and we're not going to have the means to do that.
Yeah, you haven't even booked the name, so you didn't even know like how much people would even charge for stuff like that.
Yeah, I had no barometer.
Yeah.
I just immediately assumed, I guess because I was such a mark for him, that he would be charging like an exorbitant amount of money.
Yeah, like a year salary or something for us or something.
And so I just immediately like dismissed that idea. I just thought, well, we're never going to get Jimmy. And then the card is fast forward to, I think it was like New Year's Eve or something. I know we were driving to go up to hang out with Jason in Iowa.
Uh-huh.
And I get a text message from Jason that says, hey, do you see this message on Twitter? I go in and check it out, and it's a message from Alex Castle, the Daywalker, the best vampire character in the history of professional wrestling. And he says, hey, Jimmy Jacobs asked me to get a hold of you. Here's his email, you know, shoot him a message. And I thought, like, man, is this like a rib? Did somebody tell him I'm a huge Jimmy Jacobs mark? And
you know, and why even would he be the secretary yeah. to Jimmy Jacobs? That just seems kind of weird on
his
own. I
think I put it back together, and I think he probably was working IWA Mid-South together.
Oh, okay.
I bet that's what it was. Or on a show in the Chicago area together or something. But we thought, I thought, okay, well, like, we have to send him a message. And at this point, the show is already sold out. And uh-huh. we already have Colt Cabana on the books. And so
you're 10 days away, approximately, from the show in general.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. So I guess so it was very close. Like, it was probably within 2 weeks.
So there's no more promotion that even needs to be done at this point. But you're
exactly.
entertaining this whim of Jimmy Jacobs wants to get a hold of you.
And that was the thought. It was like, number one, we were marking out because we were like, okay, Jimmy Jacobs wants to get a hold of us.
Uh-huh.
And then two, it was, okay, well, if we can, by chance, work something out that financially makes sense for us, well, I guess I'm kind of jumping ahead because we didn't even realize that it was going to be like a booking request. So we email him, and he lets us know, like, hey, I'm going to be in the St. Louis area that day anyway, and I have some friends in St. Louis that I would like to see me wrestle. And so I'm hoping we can work something out.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when it was like, oh, we realized, oh, okay, he wants to get on the show. Holy shit. What are we going to do? We can't. And the whole time Jason is like the devil on my shoulder of like, I have a good Greg on the left side of me, and he's uh-huh. going through all the finances and everything. And then I have one on my right shoulder that is Jason Colner, and he's just going, do it, do it, do it,
do it.
This was kind of the dawning of that, where he was just like, we got to do it. I don't care what the fuck he's charging. We got to do it.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, you know, let's figure it out. So we talked to him, and it turns out, you know, he really wants his friends to see him. So he gives us, I still don't really know what his rate was at the time, but I'm sure he gave us kind of a brother price. And so when we saw the numbers, we were like, well, we added up all the tickets we already had sold and what we were going to, you know, potentially make, and we realized it kind of filled that gap. So we were like, at worst, we break even, and maybe we're still in the mindset at this point of maybe every show is the last show. We don't really know. So we were like, we're like, fuck it. If this is the only championship show we put on, we're going to not be able to live with ourselves if we don't have our probably number two favorite wrestler of all time on it. Jason's always said, if you do like a, what do you call this thing, like a Venn diagram, you know, it's like the epicenter of Greg and Jason's favorite wrestlers would probably be Shawn Michaels and Jimmy Jacobs, number one and number two. And so just because of all those, of the influence on the way that we like to tell stories in the ring and all that we went over. And so we're like, fuck it. We got to book them and we'll figure it out.
Right.
Because we don't even know what we're going to do with them. The card is set at this point. And so we say, okay, let's make it happen. And really, I mean, we'd only communicated over with them over email. I, up to the day of show... still thought there was a shot that, like, maybe this was some sort of fuckery. Like, somebody
like had... Alex Castle playing a real good rib on you?
Yeah, or somebody. You know, like, I don't know. I was just like, well... I remember even telling, like, Mikazi that day, like, laying down the match and being like, this, you know, it's going to be you four against you three, Jimmy Jacobs. And he was like, what? Like, Jimmy Jacobs is going to be here? And I was like, yeah. And, you know, I think so, because we had made the... decision then once we booked them, okay, the place is sold out, no one else can, this isn't going to do anything for us to say it ahead of time, so we'll just have him show up. And that's what led to the decision to booking Danny and Paco. We're like, oh, we'll book these two new kids, they'll come out and wrestle, shake hands, and then Jimmy will attack them. I'm glad that you laughed at that.
For those who aren't following why I'm laughing, it's because Danny Adams currently beats the crap out of anyone who happens to shake hands. So I just find this long-term comedy goal a little fun.
I'm not going to give anybody else credit for this. I had the idea to somehow get over. I never really worked it out, and Jimmy ended up having to cancel because of his leg injury anyway. But when we were going to have Jimmy back for the mega ticket this year, I wanted to somehow shoot like a reacts or an in-ring or something where we basically said that, like, Danny Adams hates handshakes because it's some sort of PTSD syndrome from this attack.
Yeah.
Like, I never really worked out how we would make that happen, but I was like, just like, man, the only time I ever shook somebody's fucking hand, I got the shit beat out of me. I'm never shaking another hand again.
And like, beating down anyone else who does.
And so, it was kind of a half-baked idea, but I think somewhere in there was some really good comedy.
There's some really good half-baked ideas that we get sometimes, though.
But yeah, so cut back to the actual event. Jimmy comes out after this match, spears them both after they shake hands, and he's just kind of standing there basking in the glory. And then I come trotting out, like, yeah. Then the tide kind of turns a little bit as I announce that he's with me and with my team. Because the idea we end up going with is Dan Walsh was originally slated to wrestle twice.
Uh-huh.
He was going to work the match with Colt Cabana and then move on to do the 4-on-4 elimination final. So we thought, okay, well... you know, there's no need for Dan to work twice then. We can slot Jimmy in, and it really plays with my idea of the whole deal where, you know, I'm just trying to buy mercenaries. Not putting together a real team. I'm the Yankees. I'm buying up all the free agents that I can. And so we thought it fit in perfectly. We explained it to Jimmy. He got it immediately. And so the thing for me that I really look back on at the tape, you noticed – it when we watched it was, you know, we're going out there and I tell Jimmy what we're gonna do. I'm like, I'm gonna go out and explain that you're on my team and all this. And he was like, you don't want me to talk, because obviously he's one of the great promos in the history of wrestling. And I was like, yeah, I just think I can kind of get the concept of what we're doing over a little more, you know. And but you know, if you want, I was still very timid with names because I mean I had very little interaction with people. But I had never been the one, like, in charge of name wrestlers, you know?
Right.
And so I was, like, I was very nervous about, like, asking them to do too much or weird stuff like that. You know, I wanted everybody to have a very good impression to where if I ever sent an email and somebody said, this fucking nothing place in Granite City is asking to book me. Hey, Jimmy, what's it like? I didn't ever want him to be like, man, they fucking made me cut a promo and do this. Like, I don't know.
Just ask the world of me.
At the time, my anxiety was building all these bad scenarios that could go down. And so I was like, well, you know, if you want to talk, you're more than welcome. And he was like, I'll take it if it's there. If not, no big deal. Mm-hmm. And so we go out, and in the middle of the promo, I kind of stop and pause and look at him, and he just keeps looking forward. And maybe it was just him zoning out. I'll never know. But to me, it was him being like, all right, he's doing good, yeah, and I'm going to let him go. And so that meant a lot to me to be – and I know even that moment means a lot to Jason, too, of just seeing, you know, this guy that we both have idolized. And it's weird for me to say because I have so many friends that are colleagues of him now, you know, but
yeah,
it's weird to mark out over it, but I still will. I think at the end of the day, if you can't appreciate that kind of stuff, you know, then you're not really getting the full enjoyment. You're not stopping and smelling the roses, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was so cool to be in the ring with this guy that I'd idolized and to have Jason's down there filming it. And he took it in too, like, wow, like my friend is in the ring with this guy that we both have followed around the fucking country, mm-hmm, to watch, you know, these and follow these shows and stuff. So that moment in particular was very big for both of us. It's one of the things I can go back and watch this, and it still just kind of gives me goosebumps to think about how we felt in that moment.
Right, know? Yeah. And if none of that wasn't enough on its own, just being in the ring with him, knowing that he was going to take the mic from you if he just felt that he needed to add a little more, and he just kind of standing there silent and letting you be the guy to lead the promo, just letting you take control of the whole thing, almost like Jimmy Jacobs giving a stamp of approval to, yeah, exactly what you do.
And I don't want to over-tell it, because, I mean, like I said, man, he might have just been fucking zoning out for all I know. But
Could have been.
It did mean a lot to me in that sense, and that's the way I took it too. So to finish it by, you know, we shake hands and we put over he's going to be in the main event, and the crowd, there's a few people in the crowd that are just going absolutely fucking insane at the idea that he just popped up out of nowhere,
that Jimmy Jacobs just showed up at a random fed to them.
And it was, I mean, at the time we were very random to you figure we had never booked a name before. The name that we did book still hasn't even came out. And here comes fucking ROH superstar Jimmy Jacobs.
Right.
And so
I think actually this was like right before he went to the E too, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing. I think the reason that he wanted people to see him is because this was going to be his last time in St. Louis.
Yeah.
So he knew.
So there was even a little bit more shock from people who, you know, the smart marks again, who knew, oh, Jimmy Jacobs is going up to a WWE contract. Here he is coming out to the PWC.
I don't think that it was known.
I think it was afterwards?
Yeah, it wasn't known until afterwards, because okay. I remember even asking him about, like, oh, where are you staying? Like, can we have you in again afterwards? And he was kind of like, oh, yeah, you know, like, you know, it wasn't dismissive, but just, like, looking back, I kind of understand he knew he wasn't going to be around long.
Yeah.
But it didn't, I know it wasn't long, because he had his last match WrestleMania weekend, mm-hmm, for Ring of Honor. And so you figure this is early January. And just from listening to podcasts with him and all that stuff, he was in negotiations at that time. So he already kind of knew he would be wrapping up soon. And yeah, so I think that's kind of what got all this going on. But we've mentioned before kind of these weird fate situations that we seem to fall into.
Right.
And this was one of them. It was just like, who could have guessed this guy that we dismissed that couldn't, you know, we were like, man, there's no way we're going to get him.
Thought he was way out of your league.
Yeah. And he's there to put on his final performance in front of some friends and family, and, you know, and we were able to have this big surprise. And I think that the fact that we had him as a surprise legitimized us, if easy for me to say,
right,
in the eyes of the fans that came to see us that were Anarchy fans, because even Anarchy had never really done anything like that, where here's this huge name guy that shows up out of nowhere. So I think they took it as like, wow, like we got to be at every show because anything can happen.
Yeah, you never know who's going to come through that curtain that's taped up to the wall, as every promo does. Eventually, that one had to end, which pushed us off onto the next match, which was Dangerous Devereaux versus Stephen Kennedy, leader of the Resurgence.
So this match is, it's funny. He comes through the curtain. You're watching the DVD. Devereaux comes to the curtain, and I'm riding high from the goosebumps of the fucking Jimmy Jacobs promo, and I'm like, oh, god damn it, it's Devereaux, fuck. Like, you sort of forget that this is a Matt Fitchett versus Stephen Kennedy match,
right,
you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's the only time that they ever wrestled. If they wrestled before, it would have been in Dynamo when Fitchett was real early on, you know, and really green. This was kind of like maturing Matt Fitchett versus Stephen Kennedy, and they have a really solid match when you go back and watch it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, it was better than I definitely expected going in, because it's funny that you just, even me, I forget that Devereaux is not just a shitty masked wrestler. It's
right,
Matt Fitchett, you know? And so, but yeah, they have a really great match. It's something I wish we could have done, Fitchett out from under the match versus him at another point before Kennedy had to hang him up. But the whole idea with this was Kennedy has had this terrible season, and he's going to go in and face Devereaux. Devereaux can't get on a team because, well, we never really explained why he couldn't get on a team.
Kind of crazy. Let's just go with that.
Yeah, he's winning and he's off-putting, and so nobody wanted to sign him. So the idea was that he wrote into the Series Insider show and made the challenge that if he can't get on a team, that he'll wants to win one. And so he was going to challenge Stephen Kennedy, who couldn't hold his own for his team, and came in last place, or second to last place. I think they were last place. And so Kennedy puts his team on the line up against Devereaux,
uh-huh,
saying, you know, if I can't beat Devereaux, then
I don't deserve the team.
Yeah. They keep referencing on commentary that it was unidentifiable hieroglyphics. What it really was I wrote really badly on a piece of paper.
Uh-huh.
And then crumpled it up and took a picture of my cell phone and sent that to Jason to put up on the Series Insider. But it wasn't like unlegible. I mean, it was, I don't know, man. Like, I think that Jason originally wanted it to be like another language or something.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I don't have time for this. So I just wrote really poorly. Like I think I took, I balled up a fist,
uh-huh,
and put the pen in it and just kind of wrote like that.
Like you're writing with a cast on or something.
Yeah, like a
that.
Child would write. Oh, man, it was real bad. Nobody knew that going into the match, I guess, so we had that on our side.
After the end of this with Kennedy winning, so that way he can keep the resurgence under his thumb, you keep being the leader of the resurgence, I should say. Not like Kennedy's like some autocrat or something like that. Kennedy didn't just kind of accept the situation and kind of move on. He had a challenge to throw out to Gary J specifically.
Yeah, he challenges Gary J. That was going to be the second in a trio of matches between them. And so he lays down that challenge for stage one to kind of right the wrong. The idea was he was going to spend season two sort of getting the monkey off his back of season one.
Yeah.
Because season one did not go the way he wanted to. He couldn't keep his roster together, and he sort of like just looked like a bum leader. And so he wanted to right those wrongs, put together a good team, and really make a championship run. And he gets that over on the microphone.
And he started off well by usurping someone who wanted to start a mutiny, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
And so then he's trying to right the wrongs that's personally done, I guess.
And we talk about the butterfly effect stuff earlier.
Uh-huh.
There's sort of two interesting butterfly effects in this match.
Yeah.
Number one is, originally, the whole idea of bringing in a name was going to be for Kennedy to wrestle.
Okay.
The idea was that we wanted Kennedy had had this bad season. He'd had bad luck winning matches. And so he was going to challenge a big name and prove, I'm going to win my team's respect and everybody's respect by beating this big-name guy. And for some reason, and this just goes to show you how much I've matured as a promoter and how much intelligence I have gained. For some reason, we thought, Jimmy Jacobs, totally unreasonable. Really,
okay.
Real solid idea, Rhino.
Rhino.
Originally, it was going to be Stephen Kennedy versus Rhino.
And wow.
We really got on a train for a while that Rhino was the right name to book. And
uh-huh.
I don't know why. I don't know what settled us on Rhino. But we were like, fucking Rhino would bring in some people.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, probably would.
You know, like he's probably, I guess we thought he was in our price range, but Jimmy Jacobs wasn't. I don't know.
Yeah, ECW talent. I don't know how they price themselves.
I don't know where I booked that fucking logic at. But I remember at the time, Rhino had a Twitter account, but no, like, email to book him at, or, there was no easy way to get a hold of him.
Okay.
And so we emailed Todd. I think Jason got a hold of Todd from 3XW and says, you know, hey, we're thinking about bringing in Rhino. I think you guys have booked him. And within about 10 minutes, I have Rhino's phone number in my fucking inbox.
Oh, wow.
And so for a longest time, I had in my phone book just Terry, and that was fucking Rhino. And it was just, I remember looking at it at one point and just being like, when did our life get so fucking weird? Like, how do I have Rhino's phone number in my phone book right now? Well, it's wild. I mean, we never even tried to contact him. I think at some point...
That is kind of wild.
I think some point during that is when we had the Colt Cabana idea, because we realized, oh, Colt Cabana's in Chicago. We probably don't have to pay a flight. And we started doing those numbers. So we were like, okay, well, you know, even if he's more money than some of these other guys, what we might be able to save on what we would have to pay trans on these other dudes. And so, the meme where there's all the numbers above your head.
Right, yeah.
Like, that was me, and I think that's how we got on the Colt Cabana train. And so we set on that. But that's kind of a funny story from this. The name was supposed to fight Kennedy, and at some point we got really stuck on a Rhino. I don't know. God, I don't fucking remember why. Not that it's a bad idea to book Rhino. I'm sure he's a great guy.
I was actually going to suggest, it was like, don't lose that phone number when he's done with the E. That would be a really cool one to bring in. I personally would love to see this.
It was just very funny to me that I don't know why in my head, like, Jimmy Jacobs, no way, he's way too expensive. Former WWE star Rhino, I'm sure we could do that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why that was my line of thinking.
Decent thought. Book him versus KLD.
There you go.
That might be a decent match.
Hope for that Rhino release.
I'm not hoping for someone to lose a job.
You heard it here first. Dan wants him to lose his job.
Whoa. Hey, he's got kids. Does he have kids?
I don't know.
He's got a mayor job, doesn't he? Or is that?
No.
I swear he was like a...
He ran. I think he lost.
Yeah, he probably... Yeah, well...
He's probably going to smash a vase somewhere.
Sorry, Terry.
Or something. But the other butterfly effect thing from this match is the post-match was supposed to be he lays down the challenge to Gary J, lights go out, and Nikki Strychnine appears.
Yeah.
And beats
who we talked about during the review for the last one.
Yeah, so we talked about who he was, but this was supposed to be the debut. So we had kind of flirted with him. We had all these plans in place where he was going to take over. Because the story was that Pierre had dodged the dojo here. Pierre had sort of screwed his own team out of the championship by running in on the main event of Stage 3.
Right.
And this was around the time that Donald Sterling got ousted as the owner of the Clippers. And so we thought, what a great idea if the league says Pierre is unfit to own a team because he's too involved with the team and he's, you know, screwing his own team out of the championship, all this stuff. So he's got to sell the team. So then Pierre, as a vindictive asshole, sells to somebody far worse than him was the whole idea. And so the idea that he would sell the team to this hate monger, Nikki Strychnine, and he would come out and Pierre would stay on the team just to be like, you could have been me. But I was unfit to run the team, remember? So just now you got Nikki Strychnine.
Was plan A. Now you're looking at hatred walking. Look what you have done.
And so he was supposed to come in and attack Stephen Kennedy after this match, and that was going to be the dawning of Hate Nation was going to be his team name.
Oh, Hate Nation?
That's where the Chaos Nation came in for Stephen Kennedy.
Ah, Kept the Nation. Nice.
And so, yeah, he was going to come in and beat him down. And I remember, unfortunately, though, he no-showed this show, and it wasn't like a scenario where, you know, he was just being shitty. He had legitimately gotten mugged and beat up.
Ooh, wow.
Like with some sort of weapon. I remember he sent me a selfie of like, man, I'm really fucked up. And it was just like, I mean, he looked really bad. Like, I think he had spent some time in the hospital.
Ooh.
And so it was sort of touch and go as to whether or not he would be there. I think he had like said he would be there, but then, you know, his health was kind of up and down. And so we wrote it into the script, but we sort of knew like as the day was going on, and I knew once the show started and he wasn't there that it probably wasn't happening.
Uh-huh.
And I remember kind of freaking out a little bit because we were like, well, we really wanted this big moment. And everyone in the locker room knew that Casey Carrington was there to watch the show with his kid. Mm-hmm. And everyone kept saying, well, why don't you just book KC? And I was like, dude, I fucking tried. Like, he's done. He doesn't want anything to do with this. And they were all like, he wouldn't be here if he didn't want something to do with it.
Yeah.
And they all kept talking me into it. And so finally, Stephen Kennedy was like, I'm going to go talk to him. And if he wants to do this, you know, will you let him do it? And I was like, of course. I would. I mean, that's, you know, no offense to Nikki Strychnine, but that, you know, everybody kept, like, I remember Mikazi yelling out audibly in the locker room, will somebody in fucking St. Louis please book Stephen Kennedy versus KC Carrington? And, you know, I was just like, man, it's not for lack of trying, dude. We kind of like argued with multiple groups of people. And eventually, I think Kennedy at intermission goes out and kind of broaches the subject of like, hey, this was supposed to happen and it didn't go down. You know, would you be interested? And so he kind of came back and talked to me a little bit at intermission.
Uh-huh.
And we were like, look, dude, no pressure, you know, but you know I'd love to have you. And you know we'd love to do this. And by the end of the night, he, you know, comes to me and is like, all right, I'm in.
Yeah.
And that was how Hate Nation became Chaos Nation, was by just some weird circumstance that Nikki Strychnine. And that's one of those things of like, where would we be at without that story?
Yeah.
Where, you know, what would that second year have looked like if Nikki Strychnine would have been the guy instead of KC Carrington? What, you know, what could have happened? One of those butterfly effect things is that's fun to think about. But
it really is.
I'm upset that we didn't get to use Nikki because he is a legendary character in the area. But I don't think there's anything storyline wise that we've ever done that we love more than the Chaos Nation. Carrington versus Stephen Kennedy storyline. So
we'll probably repeat this over the next handful of podcasts. That's some of the best stuff that I've seen.
And so we're in a, you know, we're sad that it didn't go down with Nikki, but it, as the fates would have it, very happy that we got to do that. So.
Very happy indeed.
All right, guys, thanks for listening. Next time we'll get into the Colt Cabana versus Dan Walsh match. We'll discuss a little bit of that. And who knows what else we'll be discussing in the intro and beyond. We'll see what befalls me this week. Thanks again, guys, for coming out and making Stage One a huge success. Be looking at the Facebook website and Twitter account to look for news on Stage Two. We'll be dropping very, very soon. It will be Saturday night, June 16th. So keep that marked on your calendars. Ticket and match information will be available very, very shortly. Thanks so much, guys. We will see you around.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.